The book of Kohelet is a troubling book to what I think of as rigid religious from thinkers. There is a concept called tzadkan. In Yiddish, you call it afafomta. And I've never been comfortable with fafomta, because fafomtas are willing to put blinders on their eyes, both left and right, and see only what they wish to see. And if chas v'shalom you have a problem or a question, they bark at you apikoyres and shut the conversation down. Chazal did not take that kind of approach. All of our great sages looked at the problems straight on. It didn't mean that they had an answer, but they were willing to live with a question. And in my opinion, to live as a Jew is to live with a heavy, heavy burden of a whole bunch of question marks on your back. The question marks did not take away an iota from their relationship with God, because you cannot be angry and you cannot even hate someone you don't believe in. At no point did they move one iota from Shulchan Aruch, from a way of life, and in fact they remain Jews and they will die as Jews and they lived as Jews, and to live with that was to live as Yaakov did when his name was changed to Yisrael, and that is Kisarita im Elokim v'Adam. You struggled, you wrestled with God and with man. To live as a Jew is to live in a constant strife with the realities and the problems of life. That does not mean that we don't also rejoice and celebrate life. It's not that we go into chas v'shalom despair, but precisely out of a great faith that there will be an answer someday. And it is precisely that has sustained us through the ages. But again, not because we've chosen to be Pollyannish. And the worst cases of apostasy, of going off the derech, has been as a result of when you find out what should be, and then you find out that it ain't so, and when it ain't so, you are suddenly disappointed, and when no one will acknowledge the right to say, but it isn't the way it should be, and you're told that you're not allowed to ask any questions, that you then suddenly get a pachimpunim, and when you get a pachimpunim like that, you have what we often see of people getting very disappointed and, as it were, leaving the fold. I will also point out to you probably saw that in the letter of Yossel Rakovel, there are some who chose, not because they can't face the realities of life or because nobody will address them, but simply because life sometimes is too difficult being a Jew. It is too difficult to struggle with man and with God, and so therefore they are those that opt out. Yossel Rakovel called them correctly cowards. And on cowards, we don't punish them, we pity them. But for the heroes that remained faithful throughout the ages, despite all of these strife and the difficulties, for them, we will look carefully at what it is that Kohelet came along and did. Now, Kohelet, as you know, is attributed to Shlomo HaMelech. This is the same Shlomo HaMelech that can write Shir HaShirim, that can write a pedagogical Mishle, and then in his old age, look at life with clear 20/20 vision, no rosy outlook, no optimism, facing death, here's what he sees. And I am taking a very important 12-chapter book and giving you nothing more than two small quotations. Now, some have argued that what he's doing here is that he is playing the cynic. Not because he is the cynic, but because he will be able to educate the cynical youth by identifying them, by putting their case up in front and saying, you know what, you got a good point. Let me lay it out for you and tell you what you're really thinking, and then let's grapple with this together. So if that's the case, Kohelet is a great teacher. He does not discount the questions that his students have. He does not poo-poo them. He does not shut them down. He listens to them. Comes Kohelet and speaks to us. He speaks to us as an old man looking at his life. Et hakol ra'iti b'yemei hevli. I've seen it all in the days, and this is translated as a god-awful word, vanity. The word hevel means hot air. And therefore he views our lives and our intelligence and our grasp of life as hevel havalim akol hevel. In other words, it is nothing more than a breath and it's gone. I've seen my whole life, he says, and what have I seen? Yesh tzadik oved b'tzidko. There is a righteous person who, because of his righteousness, because he chooses to remain virtuous, is killed for it. And he's lost in the process. Ve'yesh rasha, and there are evil, cruel, vicious people. Ma'arich b'ra'ato, lives a very long life, sleeps well at night, while he still holds on to his evil. He then adds in the second, eighth chapter, Yesh hevel asher ne'esal ha'aretz. And now please notice, he now does not indicate this as all totality, but rather what's happening here on earth. On earth, which was given to the dominion of human beings. Because he, like his father, believes that ha'shamayim shamayim la'hashem. The heavens are heavens for God. V'ha'aretz natan livnei Adam. And he gave the earth over to the dominion of man. You will remember that in the book of Bereshit, God created human beings and told them that they would be fruitful and multiply and have dominion here on earth. Which means that we need to look at the mirror when something ain't going so right, not only to claim what is God done. And as a result, what is happening on earth, Asher yesh tzadikim asher magia lahem kema'aseh ha'resha'im, there are tzadikim that end up getting what should have been given to resha'im, v'yesh v'resha'im shemagia lahem kema'aseh ha'tzadikim. As I said, he looks at life as it is, both in terms of what he sees as the problem with where is God, and at the same time also saying, and look at what's happening here on the earth that human beings have created, where it turns out that nice guys come last, and good guys sometimes suffer at the hands of evil human beings. And that's essentially the reality. It is an existentialist view of the world as I see it with my five senses, as I experience it, flesh and blood. Not as it should be, but as it is in my experience. Recognizing, says Kohelet, that I am but a human being who can only see so far and knows nothing more than what is given to me in this lifetime. I don't know what's going to happen after I die. I can believe that there will be ultimate justice, but I don't know it. I don't experience it. And in the Torah itself, all of the rewards that are given to you is the here and now. At best, what you will bequeath to your children. Leman asher yarichun yamecha ala adama azot, so that you will live a long life here on this earth, and you will have children and grandchildren to whom you can bequeath, hopefully, a better world than yours. And please notice there isn't any kind of mention about what happens once you're dead. Because Kohelet also tells you that as far as my eyes can see, human beings and behemoths, they die the same way. Except, of course, that he also says, Motar ha'adam min ha'behema ein. The advantage, the greatness of man over the beast, and some say is not, meaning it does not exist. Or as the Sfasemis says, it's in his ability to say no. It's his ability to say no when somebody holds a gun to his head and will not simply give in to his instinct to live, but will make the right choice. And sometimes the only choice that you can have is to say no. That's the most that you can be given under the worst of circumstances. And his ability to therefore say no makes him already greater than the beast, because he does not obey his instincts and his physical desires blindly. And by the way, we're raised that way from day one. I've always pointed this out. You can go to a two-year-old, take them to the supermarket. You know how they have the chocolate bars right there next to the checkout stands? And they can say, Sapta, can I have a chocolate bar? And if I can give them excuses, you haven't eaten your dinner, it's got too much sugar, your parents don't let, all of that, I'll get more arguments than you can begin to hear at the United Nations. All the negotiations will occur in the world. But if, chas v'shalom, I say, and if I lie about that, oy vavoy, but it's not kosher, no arguments. How is it that a two-year-old understands that some things are absolutes? I want it, but I won't have it. And I can say no. And I can tell a three-year-old, we don't do that on Shabbos. It's muktzeh. And they already know the word muktzeh. Ask them if they can define it. It makes no difference. Muktzeh means it's non-negotiable. Ze lo osim. Has nothing to do with whether I want to or don't want to. But trained that way, motar ha'adam min ha'behema ein. He is greater than the beast, even when he's a little child, by his ability to say no to his own desires. And no, even to the last instinct of remaining alive. Where somebody says, kill him or I shoot you. And even if he has all the moral excuses, chayecha kodmim, your life comes first, he can choose to say, no, kill me and I won't do that. That's what makes man great. What happens afterwards is irrelevant. Because it's with the here and now that we make our decisions. We have no knowledge of the rest of it. We have to choose from what it is that our eyes can see. Kohelet states it clearly. He ends his books, which cynics say is a Pollyannish book, where he tells us, Sof davar akol nishma. In the end, it's all heard. Whatever you said, whatever you thought, whatever you did makes an impact in this world. The beginning and the end of it is, Reshit chokhma yiras Hashem. The beginning and the end all of all wisdom is the fear or standing in awe of God. Which brings us now to the book of Iyov. The book of Iyov is written by one author. There is a man named Iyov, and then you've got your author who goes and lays out an entire tragic comedy. Which means that it's shom yene gelechter, as they say in Yiddish. I would too laugh if the joke was not on me. We have a man who is a righteous, upstanding, wonderful human being. And I sent you one chapter in which Eeyore dares to stand in front of man and God and describes himself. It is his self-defense. He is there working as his own advocate. Remember, he knows he can't lie to God. He knows he can't lie to the friends that are there surrounding him who know him from day one. And so he calls it as it is. And I asked you to read it ahead of time so that you can tell me what sort of man are we dealing with that will ultimately lose it all and suffer unspeakable pain. And I will tell you that God will then say that what he said was absolutely true and not an overstatement by one iota. At the best, an understatement. Did you know, read it, how he curses himself? May such and such happen if I did this. If that's the case, then that would be it. I bring down the worst, the wrath of heaven and hell on me if I did not do what? Did you notice what he tells us about how he treated his servants? How he stood up for their rights? This was in an age when there were slaves. How he said, dares to say, did not one God create me and my slaves? Did we not both come from the womb? Did I ever mistreat somebody? Did I not open my door to someone? Did I not share my bread with anyone? Did I ever look at a virgin? And why a virgin? Because in an age where you could have more than one wife, he remained faithful to one woman and never looked, as it were, at another, permitted or not. In other words, he didn't just look at what was legal. He looked at what was, in his eyes, moral. This is a man who had it and shared it. Did he trust in his money? Did he believe in the power of his wealth? Not for one moment. And therefore, what we will do is we will look at the beginning. Because I sent you to chapter 31. It's the one and only chapter where he stands in defense of himself. And for you to understand this, let me briefly tell you about the structure of this classic tragedy. The tragedy here is actually written very much like, and I would not go beyond belief, that the famous Greek tragedies that maybe you studied were nothing more than copies mimicking what had come out of the Jews, because this was written way beforehand. And the wisdom here comes before Socrates, and far before Plato, and before Aristotle, and before any of the great playwrights. You have a prologue. You have an epilogue. In the prologue and in the epilogue, you have a narrator who is telling you and laying out the facts in front of you. And then you have a series of dialogues. The dialogues enter in when, in his grief and in his pain, Eeyore's friends, three friends, whose names will sound familiar, but seem to come from Neverland. You've got Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. Eliphaz is the eldest, the wisest of the bunch. Bildad seems to rely not on experience that Eliphaz has, but only on what we would think of as tradition. He's read it in the books. He's got book learning, but he ain't got much experience. And the youngest of the upstarts is Zophar, who's got a lot of chutzpah, and who sounds extremely frum. And in order to maintain his frumkeit, and his frumkeit is that there is a just God, and what happens to people happens because they deserve it. And if tragedy falls, you got to figure out what you did to get this coming to you. And therefore, every event and every calamity that occurs in the world, you've got to figure out why it happens. I'm sure you've heard all of this in the past, right? Such and such happened because, the women were not snuot. Such and such is happening because you have internet in your home. I can go on and give you all of that kind of thing. That's tofel for you. They will have not one, but with receding length, dialogues. The first round, to which Iyov responds briefly. The second round, which is shorter, each of them gets a turn, but each of them is briefer, to which Iyov answers longer. The third round, in which they speak less, because they're already getting sick and tired of it all, at which point he goes and gives a much, much longer soliloquy, at which point he's given up on them, and along comes somebody who we never heard of before. His name is Elihu. And Elihu, we don't know for sure where did he show up from? Or is he a precursor, because of his name, as you can tell, a precursor to God himself? Because the word Elihu means Elihu, he is my God. He condemns the friends who've managed to dig up all kinds of sins, imaginary, real, absurd sins, for which Iyov or his children or somebody, and therefore why he deserves it. By the time it's all over, they've turned Iyov into a hypocrite. And Elihu does nothing of the kind, but he does condemn Iyov for one thing only, and that is his arrogance to think that he can understand. At which point, Iyov finally makes a case for himself. That was the chapter that I sent you. And he stands there. And he demands that he wants God to face him. Talk to me. Tell me. And he finally gets it. Because there comes the voice out of the whirlwind. And in the most sublime poetry, challenges Eve to describe, do you understand that you are not the center of the universe? And that all of your complaints and all of your perspectives are because they are anthrocentric, which means believing that the human being is the end-all and be-all of creation. And we will see some of those excerpts. Iyov is thrilled. He dares, knowing that he doesn't stand a chance of winning the argument, to answer God. And Chazal tells us that tzaddikim do not flatter God. They are not chanfanim. They're not sycophants. And when they speak to God, they speak from their heart. And as they say, asetit vei shreitman, when it hurts, we scream, we cry, we rail against what looks to us as unfair. And it is at least honest. And their relationship with God is an honest one, which is why you could read something like Yossel Rakovel's letter. Do you understand? He is honest with God. Chazal tell us that there's no doubt that whoever wrote the book of Iyov, and some say that it was Moshe Rabbeinu, and some say it was Yirmiyahu, we don't know who he is. Be it whatever it is, they do not question for a minute his deep faith in one God, in the spirit of the Torah, and in the ideas of the prophets. And if you read the poetry of it, you will see that interwoven, you'll say, I remember this. Oh yeah, that's in Tehillim. Oh, I remember that. That's in Devarim. Oh, I remember this line. It sounds just like Yeshayahu. Clearly, whoever wrote this knew their works, knew their Torah, knew what was written there. Said Rava is of course one of the Amoraim, He says, while it seems that sometimes Eeyore speaks in a way that indicates that he does not believe in a just God and a good God, he says there's no question that he believes here. From here we learn something. It's a very famous saying, Mikan she'en adam nitpas bish'at tza'aro. From here we learn that we don't catch a person for what he managed to express or say, maybe inappropriately, at the time of his pain or his anger or his anguish. In other words, sometimes when we're very upset, we say things that we shouldn't have said, but we don't hold people accountable for what kind of screaming they may have said at that time. This man, the words of a man that cries out of his aggravation, out of the fact that all of his beliefs have been turned upside down, is not to be judged as what somebody says when they are not in pain, sitting in the academy, talking hypothetically. You see, Eeyore's friends who make all kinds of accusations, they also know the reality that Kohelet described, that there is a tzaddik who sometimes seems to be suffering what would be appropriate for a rasha. And there are resha'im that are flourishing, and they seem to be living a good long life, and they don't seem to have problems sleeping at night, and they die in their beds without any pain when they reach a very old age, and they see grandchildren and great-grandchildren without any problems, and that simply makes no sense. But they would rather deny what their eyes see than for a moment have their faith shaken, because their faith is already very, very shaky. Because faith that has not been tested is by definition shaky. Whereas faith that has been tested stands on columns that cannot be moved. So let's look carefully at what happens to Eeyore. The book begins quickly by telling us as follows. There was a man in the land of Utz. In case you didn't know where you got the idea of the Wizard of Oz, Oz is Utz. Some say it's Neverland. Some say it's in the land of Edom. It makes no difference. And that man was a good man. And what we hear in the prologue, after we've been established that he was a very good man, we hear a dialogue that occurs between Hashem and the Satan. This is the first time you've heard about the Satan, the devil, if you like. But the devil here is not a Satan. He's got no horns. He doesn't come from another world, and he's not God's equivalent. He's nothing more than a servant of God. He can't do anything without God's will. But he is the prosecuting attorney, if you like. Vayomer Hashem el HaSatan, who's come and said to him, and he turns to him and he says, Hasamta libcha alavdi Eeyore. This is after the sun has gone and checked out everything that's happening here on earth. And looked at the ways of man. Did you see my servant Eeyore? To call Eeyore Avdi, who was called Eved Hashem, David HaMelech. Moshe Rabbeinu is called Eved Hashem. Very few were worthy of being called Eved Hashem, my servant. And Eeyore is called that. Ki ein kamohu ba'aretz. There's none like him all over the earth. Ish tam v'yashar yirei Elokim v'sar mira. A straight, tam, perfect, a man of integrity, of honesty, God-fearing, and avoids evil. It's not just that he doesn't do evil. He steers away from it. Doesn't even come near it. Vayana Satan et Hashem. So the Satan responds. Hachinam yare Eeyore Elokim? Is Eeyore God-fearing for nothing? Halo ata sachta be'ado. After all, you protected him. Ube'ad beito. And for his household. Ube'ad kol asher lo misavivim. Whatever belongs to him. All around. Ma'ase yadav berachta. You blessed the work of his hands. Umiknehu paratz ba'aretz. And his livestock have burst forth on earth. Ve'ulam, shlach na yadcha v'ga v'chol asher lo. Just send your hand and touch whatever is his. Im lo al panecha yivarchecha. Won't he, and on your face, to your face, bless you? You know that that word bless you is nothing more than a euphemism. It means curse you. Well, what happened to Yov? What did the Satan do to him? The Satan went and killed his children, destroyed his livestock. Whatever was his was stolen from him. Tell me, don't you know anybody who's lost it all? Who's had his property stolen, appropriated, and his wife and children murdered in front of his eyes? Did you not know people like that? Do I need Eof? Is there one case like that? Or is there, in fact, over 6 million cases like that? And throughout our history, what is his response to this? Vayakam Eof, when all of this news comes to him about what's happened to his children and his livestock, he rose up. Vayikra, by the way, the word rose up, why was he, where was he? Tells you that first he fell. You could almost hear the fact that he swooned when he heard this news. He fell to the ground. But then he pulled himself together and rose up. Vayikra et milo, and he tore his coat. Vayagaz et rosho, he tore his hair out. Vayipol outside, he fell again to the earth. Vayishtachu, and he bowed down, accepting what happened. Vayomer, and he said, Arom yatsati mi beten imi, ve'arom ashuv shama. I came out of my mother's belly naked. I will return there naked. His mother's belly, will he return there? Do we call the earth where he'll be buried my mother's belly? Hashem natan, ve'hashem lakach. God gave and God took. Yehi Shem Hashem mevorach. May the name of Hashem be blessed. Bechor zot, lo chata Iyov, velo natan tifla le'elokim. And all, in spite of it all, Iyov did not sin and gave no tifla. He gave no discredit to God. At which point the Satan gives God another dare. Vayomer Hashem el Satan, Hasamta libcha el avdi Iyov. God turns to the Satan. Did you see him? Ki ein kamohu ba'aretz ish tam v'yashar yireh Elokim v'sar mera ve'odeno machzik betumato. And he's still holding on to his innocence, his integrity. And you seduced me to swallow him alive for nothing. By God's own words, Iyov did not deserve any of this. And so the Satan answers in the most shocking sarcasm. Oh, bad, oh, skin for skin. V'chol asher la'ish yitem ba'ad nafsho. And all that a man has, he'll give for his own life. Ulam, shlach na yadcha v'gai latzmo. Just send your hand and touch him himself. V'el psaro, and his flesh. Im lo al panecha yivarechecha. Im lo al panecha. If he won't curse you to your face. Okay, I'm handing him over to you. Just don't kill him. And so what we hear is that he broke out in boils. Horrible, insufferable boils that he could do nothing but scratch and bleed in interminable pain, to which his wife responds. Vatomer lo ishto. Please notice, his wife also lost her children. She also lost her property. Otcha machzik betumatecha. You're holding on to your innocence. Barech Elokim v'met. Get up. curse, bless God, curse him and you'll die. If you believe in God, then a thunderbolt will come and kill you and put you out of your agony. Vayomer Eleha. And so he turns to her. Kedaber echata nevalot edaber. You're speaking like the obscene people out there. Gam et ha-tov nekabel ma'et Elokim v'et ha-ra lo nekabel? You never asked why we had all the good. Did we deserve all the good that we had? Did we deserve the wealth that we had? Did we deserve the children that we had? We accepted those without question. And the bad we won't accept? Bechol zot lo chata Iyov b'sfatav. In all of this, Iyov did not sin with his lips. Now there is a concept, kol hamosif gorea. Whenever you add something, you're actually taking away. The first time it tells us, in all of that he did not sin. In the second time it says, in all of that he did not, despite it all, he did not sin with his lips. By implication, there was, if you like, a beginning of rebellion in his heart and in his mind. In his heart and in his mind, if for no other reason, then is it worth living? Because he will say afterwards, I wish I were dead. I'm sorry my mother birthed me. Tov moti mechayai. My death is better than my life. If it is not tifla be'elokim, if it does not hold God accountable, he at least believes that life is too absurd and meaningless. And that he begins to entertain. Those are horrific thoughts that are just beginning to take form. His friends come, and their approach is Vayishme'u shloshet re'ei Iyov et kol hara'a hazot haba'a alav. Now I want you to understand this is before there is internet. And nobody put it on a chat. And nobody could immediately send out a text message that this is what happened to Iyov. But his three friends who were devoted friends, Chazal tell us and the Medrash tells us, felt in their heart that something was not right. And so they came each from their own place. Eliphaz ha-Temani, u-Bildad ha-Shuchi, ve-Sofar ha-Na'amati, Vayivadu Yachdav, and they all met in one place together, to come together, to comfort, to console, and to mourn together with Iyov. And as they came from far away, Vayisu et Einehem Merachok, and from afar they see Iyov, Veloi Kiruhu, and they could not recognize him, that's how much he was changed. Vayisu kolam, and they lifted their voices and cried, and they all tore their garments, and they put ashes or dust on their head, and threw it up to the heavens as well. Vayishvu ito la'aretz shivat yamim v'shivat leilot, and they sat with him on the ground for 7 days and 7 nights. Ve'en dover elav, and no one spoke to him. Because you know the halacha, that until the mourner does not begin to speak, those that comfort him don't say a word. Ki ra'u ki gadal ha-ke'ev me'od. And they had nothing to say. All they could do was suffer with him. Until Iyov began to curse his day. And when he began to curse his own life, at that point, the three friends begin to each give his soliloquy. Eliphaz the elder speaks more respectfully, tells us the things that we've heard about. This is the way God communicates with man. Perhaps this is a test of your faith. All of the questions and all of the orthodox ideas that we've heard a long, long time ago. All of the old canards are being brought in. But frankly, with tremendous beauty, because this is a gorgeous, terrifyingly gorgeous book. At which point I want you to hear Iyov's response to the first round. Because you can imagine, you must have done this, or maybe your kids didn't do something quite right, or maybe this was not okay, or maybe you were a little too proud, or, you know, you think about it all. Come up with any kind of idea. Because after all, we're taught that if a person has yisurim and suffers, yifashpesh b'ma'asav, he needs to go and check out his deeds and see, perhaps I did something wrong, maybe this is a warning, maybe I need to make some changes. And so he responds. And his response I'm calling Leit Din veLeit Dayan. This is the sin, the first stage of sin. And that is that Iyov is coming to the conclusion, not that there isn't a God, and not that that God is not just, but that he's abandoned this earth. What we call Hefter Ponim. And therefore, there is no law, and there is no judge, at least here on earth. Imetz Dak Piyal Shiei Tamani Vayak Sheini. If I am right, my mouth will convict me. Because if I say I'm right, I'm already wrong. If I have maintained my integrity and won't say something I don't believe in, vayakshemi, it will already entrap me. Tamani, I am innocent. Loedanafshi. I no longer know my own life, my own self. My life is appalling to me. It's disgusting to me. Achati, it's all the same. Al ken amarti tam v'rasha hu mechaleh. I've come to the conclusion that God destroys the innocent and the wicked, one and the same. And I won't continue because we have so little time for all of this. Well, his friends now did exactly, and they took the bait. You see, this proves that you're wrong. Are you more righteous than God? Are you more innocent than him? Are you more just than the Ribbono Shel Olam? And as a result, he has another response. So here we go. Boy, talk about taking a big thing and compressing it into next to nothing. Iyov now despairs of this friend. He's disgusted with them. He says, you came here to comfort me? Nakta nafshi b'chayai. I can't tolerate it. I'm nauseated by my life. Ezva lai sichi. I would like to abandon my own conversation, my own ability to speak. Nevertheless, Adabra b'mar nafshi. I will speak out of the bitterness that's in me. Omar el Eloka. If I had a chance, I would speak to God. I'm not going to speak to you guys anymore because I know where you stand. Al tarshieni. I don't want you to convict me until you've done one thing. Hodieni al ma tiriveni. Let me know for what you are quarreling with me. Hatov lecha ki ta'ashok. Do you take pleasure? Is it good for you that you oshek is to take away something unfairly, to steal, to cheat? Ki tim'as yegia kapecha. Do you despise the work of your own hands? I'm the work of your hands. Do you despise me? Ve'alatzat reshaim hofata. Do you wish to appear, to reveal yourself the way evil people describe you? You see, evil people say there is no God. You're making it seem like that. Ha'enei basar lach. Do you, God, have only eyes of flesh that can see so little? Im ker'ot enosh tir'eh. Do you only see what human beings see? Hakiyimei enosh yamecha. Do you only live as long as a human being lives? Im shnotecha kiyimei gaver, ki tebakesh la'avoni ulachatati tidrosh. In other words, if you have done something wrong, if I deserve punishment, what's the rush? You have all eternity to punish me. You can throw me to hell forever. Must you do it here now? Was brennt? What's your rush? Why is it so quick to do it now? He still hears nothing. At which point, we go to the next stage. Now you can imagine that after that outburst, his friends really land into him. So later on in this 14th chapter, he comes to the conclusion that if he must suffer here on earth, this must be hell. You see, hell is not after you die. Hell is here. And he denies an afterlife, or so it seems. Adam yilud isha k'tzar yamim usvaroges. What is man born of woman? Short of life and satiated with aggravation. Kitzitz yatza. He comes out like a little tiny blossom. Vayimol, and he begins immediately to decay. Vayivrach katzel v'lo yamod, and then he runs away like a shadow, a fleeting shadow, and he does not abide, he does not stay. Af al ze pakachta einecha, for that God you opened up your eyes. I'm here today and gone tomorrow. For that you've gone through all this trouble. Ve'oti tavi b'mishpatimach. And for that you bring me to judgment against you. Poor man. This is now life skipping, as you can see. Ki yesh le'etz tikva. Since he compared him to a little shoot, a blossom. He says, a tree has some hope. Im yikaret, if it was cut down. Od yachlif, he has another life. How so? Yonakto lo terdan, its roots don't stop sucking up nourishment and water from the soil. Im yaskin ba'aret, if he's very old but still stuck in the ground, roots are still in the ground. Uba'afar yamut gizo, even if his trunk shrivels and dies. Mireach maim, from the mere smell of water, Yafriach, he'll begin to flower again. Ve'asak katzil kemonata, and he will produce yet harvests, just like when he first was planted. Ve'gever, but a man, Yamut, ve'yechelash, ve'yigvar, Adam, ve'ayol. But man, he dies. First he becomes weak, then he expires, and then he's gone, not here anymore. Mere mortal man, why bother with him? A tree can have a second life, but a human being, you stick him in the ground, it doesn't grow again. It's finished, so why bother with me? Leave me alone. That's what he turns to God and says.